Happy New Year. Welcome to the Happy Writer 2022 edition. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you for joining me. I am very happy to be back and feeling reinvigorated after our nice long holiday break. One thing that is making me happy is that my very first anthology came out last week while we were on break. The book is called Serendipity, 10 Romantic Tropes Transformed. Say that 10 times fast. And in this book, I got to work with 9 absolutely amazing authors, and we put together a collection of contemporary romance stories that are all inspired by classic romance tropes. I got to do the only one bed trope, which was super fun. I just loved everything about working on this collection and working with these authors. The whole process brought me a ton of joy, and I'm so excited that it's finally out in the world. I hope you will pick it up, and I hope it will bring you as much joy as it did for me. So again, the book is called Serendipity, and it should be available wherever you get your books. I am, of course, also so happy to be talking to today's guests. Becky Albertalli is the number one best-selling author of many books for young readers, including The Upside of Unrequited, Leah on the Offbeat, Kate in Waiting, and Simon Versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda, which was, of course, adapted into the fantastic film Love, Simon. Adam Silvera is also the number one best-selling author of many books for young readers, including Infinity Sun, They Both Die at the End, More Happy Than Not, and History Is All You Left Me. Together, they are the co-writing force behind What If It's Us? And its sequel, Here's to Us, which just came out this past December. Please welcome Becky Albertalli and Adam Silvera.
Hey, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to be here.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I feel like I need to catch my breath after reading those bios.
Oh, you are a total champ.
So accomplished. I'm super excited to have you. I'm a huge fan. I adore you both. And I feel like this is like my dream. What two authors would you like to have to welcome the new year, Marissa? Would you like Becky Albertalli and Adam Silvera? Why, yes. Yes, I would. So I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
That's so sweet. And thank you so much for having us. You've had such incredible guests on your podcast, and it's an honor to now be amongst them.
Well, thank you. It has been fun. It's been a really fun kind of side project the last couple of years. I feel like I've gotten to know some old friends a lot better and then made so many new friends, which has just been really cool. So the first thing that I like to ask every one of my guests is to talk a little bit about your author origin story. So what were the trials and tribulations of your life that brought you to being a published writer?
Do you want to hop in first, Adam?
Becky, you can go.
Okay. So before I launch into my origin story, I want to be very clear that my story is very unusual. I think like that's pretty important to be transparent about. And also I want to be clear that a lot of my trials and tribulations happened after I was already published. Mm. So, but my origin story was pretty charmed. I had never tried to write a full book before. I had written fan fiction for years and like little stories and things since I was a kid. But I ended up trying to, just basically wanted to take a shot at writing a novel when I was, I guess I was 30 years old, and I was staying home with my my first son, who at the time was a baby, and he definitely was not a good sleeper. So it took me maybe about a year to have any kind of headspace for creativity in any sense. But I wrote Simon during his nap times with no expectation of it going anywhere or getting an agent or getting published. And I ended up getting an agent very quickly, within a couple of days after I started querying. And my then agent sold it very quickly. And yeah, and that was Simon.
Okay, I'm going to jump in and say I also have a very charmed and quick sales story. So I know exactly what you mean when you feel like you have to like preface it with like, this is unusual.
Yeah. And I always like to say too, because, you know, I mean, I've known so many people who hear that story and then maybe get discouraged that, you know, like their queries have been out for however long. And, you know, just to be very clear, like that is not like the amount of time spent, you know, querying or on submission, the amount of manuscripts that you write, like there is absolutely no way to like rank the quality of these books with that kind of information. There's so much timing and luck, and there are just so many different elements involved. I'm very, very grateful, but also just want to be so clear to you, if you happen to be like in the trenches listening to this, do not despair if your story has not been shaping out like that. That does not mean that your book is not going to get picked up, and that does not mean that your book is any less good than a book that got picked up faster. There's just, you know, just ebbs and flows of how busy people are, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, there's so many factors outside of our control. Like you don't know if this editor or agent just signed an author, you know, another sci-fi author or another love story or what the market is wanting right now. I mean, there's just so many weird things that are going on behind the scenes that you just can't possibly know.
No. And actually when, you know, my former agent signed me, you know, when I had initially pitched it, he was a little bit skeptical. Like I don't think he expected to take me on as a client because he had signed Adam and he thought the books might compete when he actually read the book. And I don't think anybody who's read my work and Adam's will be surprised to hear this. Like, I think it became clear that like Simon versus and More Happy are very different kinds of stories tonally.
Right.
But it's so interesting because this was back in late 2013. And where we were at with the industry was that if you had a book with a gay protagonist and someone else had a book with a gay protagonist, they were immediately, instantly too similar.
Uh-huh. And, there's only room for one of them.
Yeah. Versus like, you know, had Becky and I just written, you know, like heterosexual characters, that probably wouldn't have given anybody pause just given the respective storylines in our books, right? But because they were both gay boys, it was like, whoa, you know? And to our former agent's credit, like obviously he signed both books and successfully sold them and didn't get hung up on that. But that's, you know, a clear sign of where we were at in the industry. And, you know, back then, and obviously there's still a lot of that happening today as well. But I do think that we've made strides from where we were back in 2013.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's a huge the way that the industry has tackled some of these huge issues that nobody was paying attention to. And I know for me, even the last, you know, so this is going into our third year of the podcast, and the number of books on our list with queer protagonists or, you know, protagonists of different, you know, ethnicities and diversity, these different, you know, diverse elements, it's so much easier finding them now than it was even 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. It's changing. No, it's changing for the better.
it's wild. And it is tragic how many writers we've lost to our industry not being you know, more receptive and, you know, like sooner and understanding. But I do recognize the growth that we've seen. You want it to move at like hyperspeed, and that's unfortunately just like not how like anything goes. We're very proud to have, played a role in a lot of this as well, you know, like to see so many books now comp to Becky's books and comp to my books. It's a gigantic honor. And we're, of course, grateful for so many of the queer authors who came before us, like Melinda Lowe, who's fresh off her National Book Award win this year. We clearly were not like the first queer authors to put out stories about queer characters. We just happened to hit this sweet spot as well, where our book's published in 2015, which is 1 year after We Need Diverse Books Initiative launched. And, so publishers were prioritizing more diverse titles. Luck was in our favor. When it came to the timing of that.
Right. And of course, you both wrote fantastic books that a lot of readers could relate to, which, we mentioned before, there's always a lot of factors with the industry and
for sure
marketing and all of this, publishing support, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately it comes down to, is it a book that people are going to get really excited about and want to tell their friends about? And, I think that's the actual writing. The actual book is, of course, all that really is in our control.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, Adam, your origin story.
Very similar with the fan fiction respect to Becky's. And, I've been writing since I was 11 years old, and I'm 31 now, going on 32 later this year. And it's wild. Like, I definitely had a moment in the past few months where I was like, I've been writing for 20 years now. And, like, consistently writing for 20 years, I didn't go to college. That just like wasn't in the cards for me financially and with my family. But I ended up working in bookstores, including Barnes & Noble for a few years, where I first started off in the cafe. And then I kept hand selling books while making people's Frappuccinos. and they swiftly moved me to the children's department. Where I worked for a couple of years. I was at Barnes & Noble total for like 3 years, and then worked at Books of Wonder in New York City, which is a beautiful, wonderful local independent bookstore, for a few years as well, like on and off. And I had an internship for a now like defunct website, but was a writing website for teenagers. And I was a book reviewer for Shelf Awareness, reviewing children and young adult novels. So even though I never went to college, which is obviously not a instrumental thing or mandatory thing for authors, I definitely built a pretty I like to tell people I kind of like built my own master's degree in publishing and creative writing from just having worked in all these different corners of the industry. And everything made me a stronger writer and a smarter author. And, I definitely also benefited from living in New York, which is the hub of publishing. And that allowed me to organically network with agents and editors and publicists and marketers and librarians and booksellers, and really built my community. So when it came time for me to query, I already had a lot of people who were interested in what I was going to be doing. Hilariously, they all rejected me. so even all these like great friendships I have with people, they're still kind of like, the book needs work or whatever. And it did, so I'm like, I'm so grateful that nobody took me on just to take me on, and instead gave me the editorial feedback that I needed. And I, reworked my book like completely, and then got my agent. And it was a fast sale in comparably to many other authors, but it was like I was probably on submission for maybe a month or between a month or two. So it, you know, I definitely would still say it's a charmed experience, even though I was literally widely rejected by every publisher except Soho Teen, and particularly my editor at the time, Daniel Ehrenhaf. And, you know, but that's all it takes, right? Like you're only going to publish your first book at one publishing house. And so you just need one yes. And that was my one yes. And it was, you know, from a publishing house that I wasn't expecting to publish with. And they launched More Happy Than Not in such a incredible way that I felt like I was publishing with one of like the big five, you know, or I think at the time, like the big six. And but that was my experience, literally being published by every publisher, including the publisher that now publishes all my more recent works today.
I love that you both come from a fan fiction background, because I also come from a fan fiction background.
Oh my God, that's right. Yeah, that completely flew over my head. I remember hearing so many stories about this from you over the years.
Yes, yeah. So I wrote for Sailor Moon. What did you guys write for?
I wrote for Sailor Moon.
No!
Yeah, I think, like, that was actually my first fandom that I wrote for. You know, largely I wrote for a different fandom that I don't think will surprise anybody, but I'm not going to say what it is because I'm mad at the author right now.
I think we can probably guess.
Crack that code. Yeah.
But Sailor Moon was my first, so.
I love it. Did you write like first season Tuxedo Mask Sailor Moon, or what were you?
Oh, first of all, I'm mortified to you that I wrote using the like American dub names.
Oh yes, Serena Darian. We all started with the American dub names.
It wasn't a ton of
to be ashamed of.
I was, you know, like I would watch it like on TV. So my favorite character was Sailor Mercury. So and I was like into shipping her with that like one guy who his American name was Greg, who showed up.
Oh yes, Greg. I love it.
Spark my imagination back then.
Yes, Adam, what did you write for?
Well, first, I just have to say, like, it's hilarious to me that I, like, never got obsessed with Sailor Moon, and, like, am not in a better place to engage in this conversation with both of you right now, because, like, Sailor Moon seems, like, 100% up the alley for, like, young, gay, closeted Adam. Like, I don't know how I didn't get there.
How did we miss this?
But, you know, I also wrote for the fandom that should not be named. And I also take great pride in like gaining up that fandom. Well, I'm not single-handedly, right? But like contributing to the gaining up of that fandom. But I had that. I had a little bit of Supernatural. But like my main thing was Charmed, the TV show. That was my absolute favorite TV show growing up. I think, like, you know, okay, I'm stuck on a desert island. It's a current battle right now between Charmed and Veep, like which show comes with me. But Charmed was like so foundational for me as a writer. It was so foundational for me when developing my fantasy series, the Infinity Sun books. But Charmed really, when I wasn't in college, even like mostly throughout high school, like I was just writing so much Charmed fan fiction.
I have never seen Charmed. I know people love it.
It was truly, truly my show. I saved up 1 year, and I grew up poor as shit, and saved up 1 year to create my own like magic book of spells that I commissioned off eBay. It was like $200 or something. And I remember asking my mom to ask like her new boyfriend to help contribute to this and everything, because I'd been so supportive of their relationship when I could have been a bratty teenager. I actually still have it. My mom, when she flew out to visit me in Los Angeles after I moved out here. She surprised me with it. And so now it's like sitting here in my house. But yeah, but Charm was absolutely, I mean, show about three sisters who happen to be witches. Was 8 seasons. I completely obsessed.
Oh, I love it. I love hearing about the things that like really influenced different writers, because it's not always what you expect.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have a super Sailor Moon fan, Becky.
I know. I had no idea.
Love stories.
I love it. Okay, we should probably talk about your new book at some point. Would you please tell listeners a little bit about the duology? What If It's Us and Here's to Us?
So What If It's Us is about two boys named Arthur and Ben who cross paths in New York City. They have a really cute meet cute, if we do say so ourselves.
It's such a good meet cute. Yeah. Like, yes, exceptionally meet cute.
Thank you. Yeah, it's all in chapter one. You don't have to wait very long for it at all for our heroes to meet. And, you know, they meet cute, but then they get separated and they don't have each other's like information. And Ben just kind of assumes that he's never going to see Arthur again. Arthur is completely smitten and is going to do everything in his power to reunite with Ben. And they do reunite, obviously. And yeah, but then it just becomes this like really fun story of many first dates and trying to figure out if they are a good fit for one another. And then we left it with an ending that a lot of people had many opinions about the past 3 years, as readers are, of course, allowed to have. And then we decided to write Here's to Us to wrap up the story.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Readers definitely had opinions, and I specifically got to hear most of them. But
misogyny.
It's like a thing. Like, I've talked to several like co-author pairs in terms of, you know, who bears the brunt of the angry feedback.
And it's, oh, spoiler, it's not the man.
It's pretty consistent, but so I'm definitely not going to spoil Here's to Us. I'm gonna kind of walk us into it instead. So Here's to Us takes place about like 2 years after the main events of What If It's Us. It's really only a couple of months after the epilogue, though. But Arthur and Ben are, you know, a little bit older. They've grown a little bit. Arthur is, you know, 18 going on 19. Ben is 19. And they are in New York. They're both in New York at the same time. This is Arthur's first time back in New York since he left that summer. And both of them are in new relationships or quasi-relationships. So Arthur is dating this guy named Mikey, who we did meet in the epilogue of What If It's Us. Mikey goes to his college and he is like very sweet and steady and on paper, he is absolutely the perfect guy for Arthur. Ben is, he hasn't like defined the relationship with his guy, Mario. Mario is a guy from Ben's creative writing class who does get like a blink and you'll miss it kind of nod in the What If It's Us epilogue. But you have to be reading really closely, I think, to see that. But and Mario is on paper, I would say, the perfect match for Ben in a lot of ways. He's very charismatic. He is also a total sweetheart. And, basically we threw these boys back into the same city with these new relationships. And then we let the universe do its thing.
I love that you already brought up the universe, because it is one of my favorite things, especially in contemporary romance, when the universe itself seems to be a character. And I love the way that you work with the universe and you drop all of these hints and these little symbols. And is it a coincidence or is it actually other forces at play? For you, on a personal level, how much do you believe in the capital universe?
I am definitely a big believer in the capital U universe, which is hilarious since I write Ben, who is in the biggest believer in the capital U universe. And it's so funny, like as I'm writing my other books now too, I'm noticing how casually I like to say like universe, the universe this, universe that. I'm just like, oh man, I really feel like I can't hit that tone anymore unless it's in like these What If It's Us novels, because it is such a character in these books. So like the book I'm writing now, I'm changing it to like Destiny, which I also like have some beliefs in, but I've got to change up the tone because I was like, oh yeah, like my ingrained beliefs are definitely slipping into like all my works. But because it's so defined here in What If It's Us, I feel like I'm not allowed to use it in any other book, or at least like not in, I need like 5 or 10 more books to pass. But I don't know. I believe things happen for a reason. I look back at many things that were like disappointments and understand later what the benefit of that was, and whether it's like heartbreak or a book rejection or a TV deal falling through. You know, I'm like, okay, like that sucked when it sucked, and I have grown from it. I've been hardened from it, or matured, or grown, whatever it is, and I then come to understand later, like, oh, this much better thing has happened. And that door would not have opened for me had that one not shut in the first place way back when.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting that, you know, that Adam is a true believer in the universe, having written Ben. And I wrote Arthur, who is absolutely a true believer. And I'm like, not a believer, but I kind of go back and forth. Like sometimes, yeah, like sometimes it definitely seems like the universe has its hands in stuff. It's like certain coincidences just feel too big to ignore, and then I feel very certain, and then I will talk myself out of it pretty regularly too, and then a lot of things don't always fit into that framework in my mind. And I'm like kind of agnostic about the universe, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think we're all allowed to be skeptical. I'm a believer, just because like there have been, you mentioned coincidence, like there have been so many weird moments in my life where it's just like, well, that just can't be coincidence, like that's just too bizarre. But I also think like that it's open to interpretation. And one of my favorite moments in book two is when Mario takes a picture of Ben and Arthur sitting together, and he's like, you're straight out of La La Land. And to Mario, like, he interprets this as it's a sign from the universe that we should go to LA and you're gonna love it. And to, of course, everyone who's reading the book, it's like, no, it's a sign from the universe that they are meant to be together. And like, it's all about perspective. And what are you waiting for the universe to say to you?
I know Mario definitely regrets not reading Here's to Us while the events were happening, because I think maybe he would have better anticipated what was going to go down soon. But I love that mention of La La Land in the book written by Becky, and it really does feel so perfect. And just also, there's so many misunderstandings in this book that it's important to remember that the secondary characters are carrying a lot of them as well. And I love that you pointed that out, Marissa.
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, so you've got these two side characters, these two boyfriends who come into the picture in the second book. And I imagine that there is this temptation to vilify at least one, if not both of them, in some way to like make it clear to the reader, they are wrong for Ben. They are wrong for Arthur for these reasons. And you don't do that. You really did a wonderful job of making them two really good guys to a point where there's moments in the book where you're just like, ugh. Of course, I don't want you to get the happy ending, but you also deserve it. Was that difficult to kind of strike that balance? Like, were you ever tempted to be like, but can we just have him be a jerk just once?
Yeah, I love that you said that. And I think that by giving them like really obvious, vilifiable traits, it makes it too easy to understand where the story is going, even if the story already feels really obvious from the first page, right?
Or
the cover, you know? You do lose a lot of that tension and that romantic tension as well, because you're just like, oh, well, you're clearly like not a good fit for him too. But I also think it's such a testament to Arthur and Ben's growth, you know? Like, because since this book does take place 2 years after the boys have met, it really just, you know, we get to live in their growth and their deeper world understandings, and to see that it's like, okay, here I am with someone who like feels perfect for me on paper, because I do the same thing, right? I'm like, oh my God, like he's into the, you know, it's like in 500 to Summer, there's a really great line from Joseph Gordon-Levitt's sister, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, where she's just like, just because she likes the same cool shit that you do, like, doesn't mean like, you know, you're going to be soulmates or whatever. And I've absolutely been like, but we have so many things in common. It's like, so what? I have things in common with my friends. Like, that does not mean that like that person's like my husband. Right. So it's, I think for Arthur to have had such a deep connection with like the sweetest human on the planet, who loves all the same Broadway geeky things that he does. And for Ben to connect with someone over his ethnicity and over creative writing, and just like being New Yorkers and stuff. Like, yes, like there are worlds where those relationships like could be great. Right. But I think trying to mask it in a way so that we understand the greater love story at the core of this is unbeatable ultimately, mm-hmm. even if someone checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might say it's the universe.
You might say.
Sorry, go ahead, Becky.
Oh yeah. No, it was really hard for me. In particular, I think, cause I think like, my take is that like Adam lives for writing these types of like complex dynamics and this kind of tension. I felt like I was taking a leap of faith, but just with how hard I was leaning into approaching this Arthur-Mikey relationship as if I didn't already know how it was going to end. And I feel like I was, you know, I've sort of talked about this before, but, you know, that I think that was one of those things that I just straight up would not have been able to do without having collaborated with Adam, and also without having been a fan of his books all along as well, because that's really hard for me. I don't even like to hurt the tertiary characters, you know? I don't even like how Dylan spoke to that pretzel vendor.
No, okay, that's a great, let's go into Dylan. Who is responsible for Dylan?
So you could say that I'm like the technical creator of Dylan, since I wrote him for the first time in What If It's Us, but who's actually responsible for Dylan is the author David Arnold, since that dynamic between the two, which definitely needs some like asterisks next to it, but like, I mean, I wanted to write a friendship with like a straight best friend, but with the, you know, because we have like the gay best friend trope, right? And I was just like, okay, cool. We're going to like straight best friend this guy. And and show him being a wonderful, supportive, non-weird straight guy as David non-weird. Is with me. not weird about his best friend being gay and assuming that he might actually genuinely be in love with him, right? Like Dylan makes, he's so aggressively flirty. And I love them. That's like me and David. David is not dialed up to 100 like Dylan is, but there are literally sentences in that book that have been pulled from like text messages, like from David, you know, and conversations. But yeah, I mean, anytime we got to write that character, Dylan, it was so much fun. You knew it was going to be like an easier writing session.
Yeah, I love him as a character and also constantly want to throttle him.
Yes.
You need to tone it down.
That's the reaction. Yeah.
But I also
our editor just fell in love with him in the second book. Like she thought he was funny in the first book, but she was definitely wanting to throttle him a lot more. I think in book two, she really came around and was like, okay, I love Dylan.
You know, I feel that a little bit too. And my theory is because of Samantha. I feel like he met this perfect counterpart that is able to like hit the Dylan button, you know, like pause.
Literally.
And it just works. The two of them work really well. And I feel like her presence makes him so much more charming and lovable.
That's, yeah. Ugh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well done. Well done on these two side character creations.
Thank you. We love them.
Okay. I want to like back way up. So you both have, you know, these wonderful writing careers separately. How did you come together in the first place? How did What If It's Us come to be a thing?
It's really interesting to look back at just the very, very early origins of this book and like, or the series and this collaboration in general, because we started planning it before we'd ever met. We had not yet met in person. We had not talked on the phone. We had exchanged manuscripts because our mutual former agent had sold them within a week of each other. And so we were really into, you know, it was like this two-person, more happy than not, Simon versus co-fandom thing before anybody had read this.
Yeah.
This is 2013. And then kind of into early 2014, by February, we were already, you know, we were already talking about Arthur and Ben as if they were real people, kind of, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then, so you start to have this idea, you start to develop these characters. How did that go from then this idea to like, let's write this to like finished book? Like, did you sit down and brainstorm? Did you outline? Like, what was the take me through the nitty gritty process for you?
Great, yeah. So as Becky said, we started kind of like developing the idea in 2014, and what that looked like was like, what's your character's name and everything, right? And like we knew that we wanted to have a misconnections storyline, because Becky had shared like a personal anecdote in her life that was just like, oh my God, like that would be like that could be like a cool YA book, minus this like X-rated detail that was like part of the origin story from there. Yeah, it was like, you know, for Craigslist, the kind of things that you would see on Craigslist when, you know, you're like trying to sell a couch or something and people, you know, show you something else. But of course, Becky was like trying to find a boy and then, you know, someone sent something else instead that's a little rated R. But I was just like, I love the idea of the misconnection though. And, you know, like seeing somebody and like wanting to pursue them. But throughout 2014, of course, like Becky and I were editing our respective debut novels, and then, you know, other deadlines came about, and which is fine. Like our books, like, you know, you finish the first book and then you immediately jump into the second because of contracts and everything. And we just happened to hit this like really sweet spot in spring 2017, where we had both completed our third novels, for Becky Lee on the Offbeat and for me, They Both Die at the End, around the same time. So, and I think we were like both off contract or something. So we were able to just like jump to the collaboration. So by that point, we'd had years and years of conversations about Arthur and Ben and emails and text messages and conversations that were, you know, held at each other's places or at book festivals. And we just kind of kept storing this info and like Word docs and everything. So by the time that it came to write them, the story was like really, I mean, we had an outline. It was really smooth, all things considered. To this day, I still credit it as the most fun I've ever had writing. But that was really, and then, you know, so it was really just a perfect storm of like, okay, our three books were done. Our slate was cleared to just jump ahead and write What If It's Us. Mm-hmm. And then also like what was really cool about that as well is that we were both being published by HarperCollins at the time, and we had different editors, our editors like, you know, came across their own respective imprints from Donna Bray at Balzer and Bray and Andrew Eliopoulos at the time, who was working at Harper, from Harper Teen. They decided to like co-publish the book across two imprints, and so it was like a collaboration with editors as well.
Huh. Cool. I've never heard of that happening before.
We hadn't either.
So how the premise would it be like, okay, Becky writes chapter one, sends it to Adam. Adam reads it, writes chapter two. Or did you just like take, okay, here's the outline. You write yours. I'll write mine. And then we'll come back and compare notes or some mix of the two.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, for What If It's Us and Here's to Us was very, very, very different. But for What If It's Us, we mostly were able to kind of pass it back and forth. We were not, relying on that to build the plot. Like the plot wasn't, created with like building blocks from reacting to the other person's last chapter. That was developed together in the original outline, but I think, you know, that was, I think, where a lot of the joy came from. Like, I still remember, just like that feeling of like a Ben chapter, a new, fresh, new Ben chapter arriving in my inbox. And like, it was like a drop everything kind of moment. And we would like live text the other person while you're reading them. So it's just like absolutely so much. It was pure joy. And we had the outline. And so if there were times when like if one of us is traveling or something or falling behind, needed to catch up with something else, it wasn't a huge deal at all if we needed to write ahead for a couple chapters and then kind of catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, versus Here's to Us, which was not that smooth experience, because, you know, it was the novel that we were setting the stage to start writing during the early months of COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we didn't know that we would be at this point, right, entering our second year of this. I was on deadline for a different book for Infinity Reaper, which is the sequel to Infinity Sun, which, I got my notes late, 2 months late, because my editor was also affected by the pandemic, as we all were, right? So it wasn't just writers. And I think it's always important for people to remember that our publishing teams each have their own lives. And, I was now like behind as a result. Becky essentially wrote all of Arthur with maybe like 5% of Ben, you know? And because I was writing like 140,000 word novel and rewriting it and like having to get it ready for publication of March in 2021. And it just was like, it was a nightmare, you know, like it was just unfair stress, like all around, and really complicated. And of course, like, you know, in retrospect, like we've come to understand that there was a creative benefit to it, one that we still would not have chosen. We would have preferred to have done it like how we'd written What If It's Us, which was, you know, in the trenches together at the same time. But, you know, it, the benefit of it being that Arthur and Ben in this novel are distant, you know, they don't really know what one, you know, they don't have a ton of like actual concrete info of what the other one has been up to in, over the past like 2 years. They just have a lot of like speculation and misunderstandings. So for Becky to be writing all those Arthur chapters without being able to peek into Ben's head internally, you know, works out when you don't want Arthur to have certainties about what Ben is thinking, you know? And then for me to just like, to know to like keep my distance from the Arthur stuff and to like really focus on building his relationship with Mario, like that was the thing that like, I'm like, that's what Ben believes is his future, right? Even if there's the undercurrent of all the Arthur stuff, because something we also talked about very early on is that like, if there isn't one reader in the world who isn't upset that Arthur and Mikey don't have the happy ending, or that Ben and Mario don't have the happy ending, then like we've also kind of like failed at making them lovable, worthy partners for our protagonists, you know? And I just got an Instagram comment the other day that was like, Mikey deserved better.
I got one about, oh my gosh, I love the book. But I wanted Ben to end up with Mario. I was like, thank you.
I saw an Amazon review that was like, I mean, I really want to see what it looks like if Ben, you know, ends up with Mario, but I really love this too. But, you know, I was really wanting to see that. I was just like, oh, wow. You know? And I was like, cool. Like that's success. Right. But, anyway, to close that, that circle, it was not the most fun that we've had writing versus right. Especially with What If It's Us. You know, they were just between childcare and different deadlines, and it was really difficult, but I am really proud of how we managed to still tell a story that reads as seamlessly as if we'd been in the trenches together.
Yeah, no, you could never tell. I mean, that's fascinating to me to try to picture, I mean, essentially writing a book, but only writing every other chapter. I do have to say, I mean, hearing that, I think that there is Mario Mikey spinoff books potential.
Yeah.
Has this come up yet?
it came up in an event last week where we were asked like, oh, like if you could tell a different character story, who would you be in? And obviously, I think a lot of people expect Dylan. But I was like, oh my God, I don't think anybody could handle 300 pages of Dylan's like internal monologue. Yeah. It's just, yeah. But I was like, Mario, I was like, I could see, right? Especially now as a, you know, a new LA transplant. Like, I was like, I can kind of see that story. And you know, especially Mario being able to like reflect on, you know, everything that was like unresolved. But, you know, also, by the way, I love that we're like comfortably talking about this. And it's funny with like the romance genre where I don't have to really feel like I'm like spoiling the story because of the genre expectations. again, like from our cover to our first page, like it feels pretty clear. And I'm not going to spoil all the details of things, but it is just like, I'm like, I definitely see a Mario spinoff as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious. So you mentioned, you know, so you have the first book, it comes out, you receive some, you know, not thrilled responses from readers on how it ended. At what point did you two come back together and say, let's write a sequel? Or was that always like kind of a part of the plan, or was it totally out of the blue?
It was, I mean, originally What If It's Us had a different ending. The ending of What If It's Us came about, you know, in response to editorial feedback. It was a really great note from our editors that we loved. But originally the ending of What If It's Us was, you know, more traditionally in line with, you know, the expectations, you know, of romance. But I know that basically, once we had locked down the ending of What If It's Us, we were immediately starting to think about a sequel. I remember we were starting to plot the sequel on our book tour for What If It's Us in 2018. So a lot of it was just a matter of finding just a nice, relaxing time in our publishing schedules to have that dreamy collab experience again.
Right. And it sounds like you did not actually find that nice, relaxing time in your schedule.
Oh, we sure didn't.
No.
And then COVID comes and you do what you gotta do.
Right.
Well, I am so happy that you did go forward with the sequel, because I like me a happy ending, and it was a really, really beautiful ending.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, super, super proud of that ending and love it. And it's been really wonderful seeing readers from like all different corners of like the What If It's Us fandom, those who despise the ending, those who were kind of neutral about it, but appreciated like how realistic it was, and those who just loved it for what it was. You know, everyone seems really unanimous about this ending, except the couple people who want, you know,
Mario fans,
the Mario Mikey people, and you know, but they are small. I don't know how mighty they are yet, but they are. They're definitely eclipsed by the majority of the What If It's Us fan.
Of course, of course. They're just waiting for their spinoffs.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to wrap this up with our happy writer bonus round. Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Okay. Coffee, but it has to be like basically ice cream. Like it has to be more sugar and like cream and just like junk foodness, and maybe like a tiny little bit of coffee flavor, but that part's optional.
So ice cream. Okay,
we're here for the cream and the sugar.
Yeah.
Cake or pie?
Pie.
100% cake.
Music or silence?
Music.
Depends on the circumstance. When I'm writing, silence, but in general, music.
Sunny beach or snowy mountains?
Sunny beach. Keep all that snow away from me.
Both and neither. Both are fine for a vacation, but I don't think I would want to live full time on either a beach or in a snowy mountain or on a snowy mountain.
You are very like, I am not going to commit to any of these.
It's like pathological. I know.
What is your favorite writing snack or beverage?
Okay. Beverage for me, water. I know that's like kind of basic, but snack, goldfish crackers.
Water or ginger ale. Ginger ale is like my absolute favorite drink in the world. And I used to be gummies, but like gummy worms and stuff like that, the vegan ones I can find. But it's really affecting my teeth. And I think I'm done having cavities. So I am now just living and loving that cracker life.
If Here's to Us had a theme song, what would it be?
The song Here's to Us by Hailstorm.
Is there an actual song? I did not know this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Is that where you got the title?
But what's funny, so Becky found the title for What If It's Us in the Dearman Hansen song Only Us. And so Becky basically titled What If It's Us, and then I basically titled Here's to Us. But I was familiar with the song from a Glee cover. But yeah, so then I like went and listened to like the real song too, and love it. So, but yeah, but that's, it really was just like, oh, this is perfect. So
it is perfect. I love that. I did not know that, that, I mean, I knew about the Dear Evan Hansen line, did not know about the second one.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to help someone be a happier writer?
Oh my gosh. My, the first thing that came to mind, I'm like, Zoloft and therapy.
Very practical advice.
I know. I'm kind of like, don't do it. It's hard.
You guys do know what podcast you're on, right?
Yes, I know. Yeah, the Unhappy Writer Podcast, right? The Tired, Burnt Out Writer Podcast. No, I look, I would genuinely say to really only write something that is like going to genuinely excite you. And that doesn't mean that it has to be happy and joyous. Like, I have gotten so much out of exploring like really heavy themes, right? And I would say, looking back, that I've had a lot of fun writing. I was struggling with the current draft that I was having. I basically am rewriting. I basically tossed out like 30,000 words and just like started from scratch. And I found a version of the story that I'm now like, oh, I'm having fun writing. Like, it's, I'm like, this is the most fun I've had writing since like before the pandemic. And you know, and it's like, I'm writing about death again, because hashtag brand, but I'm actually like propelled forward by it, because I'm writing about themes and characters and situations that excite me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really, really good advice. And I think it is true for me that like once I hit my stride with a draft, you know, where I feel like I at least sort of know the character and have some idea of where I'm going with it, the writing itself does make me really happy. It is sometimes hard to tune out everything else. But I guess the advice is to, you know, always come back to the writing itself, because Marissa, I think you even mentioned earlier in this conversation that this is the one thing in this process that we control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah. What book makes you happy?
So many books.
Oh, that's...
I mean, I'm going to just shout out a recent duology, or the second one recently came out. Elise Bryant's books are pure joy. Happily Ever Afters and One True Loves. Like, just perfect serotonin in book form, and they're just like so smart and well done. I love her. I love her work.
I do too. I haven't read One True Loves yet, but I have it and I'm so excited. And since you mentioned her, I have to point out that she is one of the contributing authors of the Serendipity anthology.
So, yay.
Oh my gosh.
She's so good.
Awesome.
Good curating right there.
Yeah. It was like the most fun thing in the world to do. Anyway, okay, sorry, Adam, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm reading a book right now by debut author Robbie Weber. It's called If You Change Your Mind. And it's really just like gay, sunshine, love triangle fun in Florida, which I will only visit fictionally for the foreseeable few years until COVID's cleared. I'm loving it so much. I love triangles in general, and you know, just seeing like a gay love triangle just like always makes me happy.
What are you working on next?
I am working on The First to Die at the End, which is a prequel to They Both Die at the End. And that's going to be releasing in October of this year, 2022. And I will then be jumping into the last book in my Infinity Sun trilogy.
And I am working on a, it's another YA contemporary, and it is scheduled to come out, I believe, maybe like spring of 2023. And I have not really talked about it in many places, but I guess what I can share now is the main character is a girl named Imogen, who it's a book that I am using to answer the question, how could you not know that you're bi?
Hmm. Sounds like a book that a lot of people are going to relate to, I think.
I hope so. Well, I hope people can't relate to everything in it, because I am like definitely putting her through like a little bit of hell, but I hope so though.
Lastly, where can people find you?
The best place to find me is Instagram. That's the only platform that I run myself these days. And it's just Becky Albertalli, or at Becky Albertalli, one word. Just my name.
I am on Instagram. That is the best place to find me. I barely do anything on TikTok. So, you know, follow me only if you want to see something every 6 months. And I am really only using Twitter as like an updates account, because I have done my time on Twitter, and I won't be giving it any more of my life. but Instagram is definitely where I am like posting and sharing the most. And that's just at Adam Silvera, real simple.
Awesome. Adam, Becky, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us, Marissa. It was so fun.
Yeah, this is really lovely. Thank you so much.
Readers, be sure to check out Here's to Us, which is out now. I'll throw out that I listen to both books on audio, and the narrators are fantastic. So highly recommended if you're an audiobook listener.
Extra recommended. We extra recommend it. Noah Galvin and Jorge Gutierrez are amazing, phenomenal. We both re-listened to it during release week. It is, I love that audiobook so much.
They were our favorite. So good. So good.
Yeah. It's my favorite version of the book. Easily.
Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore if you can. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. Next week, I will be talking to Leslie Vetter about her debut fantasy novel, The Bone Spindle, which is a gender-bent take on Sleeping Beauty with Indiana Jones vibes. What? I am so excited. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.